Good morning and welcome back to the Counselor's Cafe. And as usual, this is where we focus on the care and feeding of the mind, the psyche, the spirit, whatever it is that makes us human, conscious of self, capable of change, and free to make choices. We offer a little psychology, a little philosophy, and maybe a little bit of something else. And this morning we're going to be talking about maybe a little bit of something else, because we're going to be talking about the psychological benefits of expressive writing, about journal writing, and about writing itself. And actually, we've got Rocco here with us this morning, and he's going to be coming in with us a little bit later on and talk about writing and our children being learning how to express themselves by writing. But before that, let me say the door is open for you to call in anytime by calling 929-9601. You can ask questions, you can disagree with what's being said, share information, get involved. If you can't call right now, you can always get in touch later by emailing counselorscafe@nc.rr.com or by writing to Counselor, Box 6, 200 West Weaver Street, Carrboro, North Carolina, 27510. And let me know what it is you'd like to talk about. Because this show is meant to be for you, with you, and we really want you to get involved. While I'm talking about getting in touch and being involved, check out WCOM's website at www.communityradio.coop and look at our program schedule. We have fascinating and wonderful new shows on. We've got our great old standards that have been on from day one, like Rocco's Saturday Morning Music Hall. I think that's 130-some-odd...
I believe it's 135.
135 Saturday mornings we've been treated to Saturday Morning Music Hall. So check out our shows. We've got the standards. We've got new ones coming on. And we want you to tell us what you'd like to hear. Also, we don't forget, this is all listener-supported radio, so while you're at it, look up at the left-hand corner of the homepage and click on the Donate Now button, because without you, there is no radio station. Okay, we're going to take a little break, and we're going to listen to some cool J.S. Bach, part of the Lute Suites. I am... not a huge fan of Bach, to the horror of several people that I know. But these Lute Suites, done on guitar by Sharon Isbin, in my opinion, are absolutely lovely. So listen up for a couple of minutes, and when we come back, I'm going to be talking about expressive writing, and then Rocco's going to join us and talk about kids and writing. Listen up. Here we go. Okay, welcome back. This is the Counselor's Cafe here at 103.5 FM, your community radio station, WCOM. Okay, as I talked earlier, or said earlier, I'm going to be talking about expressive writing, writing in general, and its uses in the importance of learning how to express. This is called an article by Katja Gashler in Scientific American Mind, the August-September issue. It's been a while since we've done any magazine sessions in this on Counselor's Cafe, so we'll do that this morning. The article is called The Power of the Pen. One Wednesday morning, an engineer named Marcus was called into his boss's office. The manager thanked Marcus for his 30 years of service to the firm and handed him his pink slip. A security officer escorted Marcus back to his office to clean out his desk and then to the building's exit. The same thing happened to 100 other engineers that day. The Dallas computer company they worked for laid them off without any notice and sent them on their way. Psychologist James W. Pennebaker, then at Southern Methodist University, managed to recruit more than half of these men and women to take part in a simple experiment several months after they had been let go. "I have never worked with such a bitter and hostile group of research subjects," remembers Pennebaker, now at the University of Texas at Austin. He asked everyone to spend 20 minutes a day for 5 consecutive days writing in a diary. Some members of the group were instructed to note how they spent their time each day. A second group was asked to write down their deepest feelings about the loss of their jobs, and the remaining volunteers were given no writing instruction at all. The people who ended up in the second group, those who poured out their anger and disappointment onto paper, subsequently experienced a dramatic advantage over their peers in gaining new employment. More than a quarter of them found a new job after 3 months. Among the other groups, a much smaller percentage found work, even though all the participants expended the same amount of effort in their job hunt and got about the same number of interviews. The results were so striking that Pennebaker and his colleagues terminated the experiment early so they could advise everyone to start writing about their innermost feelings immediately. That was 1994. Since then, dozens of studies have shown that expressive writing can heal the body and soul. In the months after an exercise such as the one in Pennebaker's study, most people, whether they are students, sex criminals, or sick patients, feel significantly better, physically and mentally. According to an evaluation of 13 different studies on healthy subjects, the results are at least as beneficial as psychological intervention. And more recent research shows that expressive writing has a long-term favorable influence on the immune system and blood pressure. Whereas all these findings seem to indicate that picking up a pen is a cure-all for our troubles, it is not quite so simple. It is important to choose the right topics. Researchers agree that positive effects from writing are achieved only when people deal with a negative situation, specifically a situation that has been bothering them and that they have not been willing to discuss with anyone. And Pennebaker warns that the moment of writing itself can be painful. "I often saw our subjects crying," he says, "but releasing blocked emotions," Sigmund Freud called this catharsis, "leads, at least in the long run, to healing." In addition, describing a problem or retelling an experience rather than merely pondering it can bring about a change of perspective. In 2006, Sonia Lyubomirsky, interesting name, of the University of California, Riverside, enlisted 96 of her students to evaluate all 3 of these methods. Only the first 2 proved therapeutic. Telling stories, whether in writing or out loud, enabled subjects to analyze an event step by step. It provided a beginning and an ending. Merely thinking about it, on the other hand, created chaos. events, images, and emotions became intertwined, leading people to relive the experience with the danger of becoming lost in misery all over again. Those who profit the most from expressive writing, Penbaker says, neither skirt the difficult issues nor attempt to minimize them. Sometimes individuals are also able to discover some meaning in their traumatic experiences, but this is just an added bonus, unnecessary for therapeutic effect. Writers should never force themselves to try to find hidden meaning in their suffering. That could do more harm than good. To make the most of a writing session, Penbaker advises people to focus on three questions. What happened? How did I feel about that? Why did I feel that way? And the first commandment is always to feel free. Don't worry about grammar, spelling, complete sentences, or repetition. None of that matters. According to Penbaker, what counts is that you devote at least 15 minutes and delve into your deepest feelings. But be careful when dealing with positive experiences. This is a little strange. But I think I can understand part of it. Writing about good memories has the opposite effect. In Lyubomirsky's study, when students were asked to produce written analysis of their happiest moments, they actually damaged their positive feelings. Perhaps because writing created a psychological distance from these memories, the students' satisfaction with them ebbed in the weeks that followed. And I think that, as an aside, I think that's probably why it's effective in dealing with negative emotions. It's because you can distance yourself from it. On the other hand, it was useful to indulge in thinking about these happy experiences. Interestingly, short written notes do no harm. In a 2003 study by Robert Emmons of the University of California, 65 students jotted down 5 things every week that they were thankful for. The participants blossomed during the experiment, experiencing good moods more often and interacting with their peers in positive ways. So what are some expressive writing tips? Write about negative experiences, not positive ones. Spend at least 15 minutes per session. Focus on your deepest feelings and let the words flow. Don't worry about spelling or grammar. And as a little bit of an addition to that article, there is now in process a clinical trial that is sponsored by the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine. The purpose of this study is to determine whether the psychological benefits of expressive writing extend to diabetic patients, how long the benefits will last, and whether additional expressive writing booster sessions will lead to greater and more sustained improvement in diabetes symptoms and well-being. And anybody who's interested in that can go to clinicaltrials.gov, that's .gov, or to the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, NCCAM, and Google that, and find out more about how they're exploring the effect of expressive writing, not just on your psychology or your mood, on your ability to think straight, but also on your physical health. So one of the things that as I was driving in today and I thought to myself, well, what about if we don't know how to write? If we have never thought about or been educated into the whole process of writing, and because we've got Rocco here, who's been a teacher for many years in many different formats, to say, what about today's youth and writing, and even yesterday's youth?
Audrey, first of all, it's a pleasure to be here with you. And writing is something that is critical to our country, civilization, and as you said, what would be the case if people lost the ability to write? I think it would change everything.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about it.
Well, you think in terms of how children and young people in general are taught to express themselves. There are so many constraints put on people today that on your behavior. And it's, you know, we're supposed to be cool. We're supposed to not show emotions. And I'm thinking particularly of young men who are not supposed to be emotional. If we don't give people a means of expressing themselves, we're really creating time bombs.
I agree with you completely. We're living in different times. Mm-hmm. And people don't write as much as they used to.
Right.
Think about letter writing.
Mm-hmm.
People don't write letters today the way they did 100 years ago or
right.
50 years ago.
Right.
And we seem to be losing the creative writing that was, you know, done mm-hmm. years ago. And we have more people now than we've ever had.
Right.
And writing is something that is so important.
I wonder, because now I'm jumping into the whole email and text messaging that goes on, where everything is shortened.
Exactly. Little short notes.
Right.
And not long, drawn-out paragraphs, descriptive, creative. We're in a different world.
So we're not really giving or educating our young people or even ourselves to the effectiveness of sitting down and fully expressing our thoughts.
Well, I think what's happened, and I am not an expert mm-hmm. on writing. Mm-hmm. I've worked with the public schools for about 40 years mm-hmm. and in a number of different jobs and positions over that period of time. And I will defend the public schools mm-hmm. in this state as an organization that's trying to do the best
right.
it can to
right.
enhance writing. But
right.
it's changed over the years. For
mm-hmm.
example, in the 60s, writing was stressed, but it was maybe more creative writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe in the 70s, the schools were trying to stress grammatical writing,
mm-hmm.
correct grammatical writing.
Right.
Then maybe the shift went to reading.
Mm-hmm.
And writing kind of disappeared for 10 years. I mean,
right.
it really never disappeared,
right,
but it wasn't
course.
Stressed as much as other things. And you have to remember, the public schools and the private schools are dealing with a very difficult situation in trying to educate the youth of this country.
Well, I think in so many cases, we expect the schools to solve all the problems of our society.
That's right.
Which is hardly a fair.
Schools are doing the best they can, and
given the tools that are given to them,
a lot of people will say, "No, the schools are not doing the best they
mm-hmm.
can, and they need to do this and they need to do that." And a lot of people don't realize that the schools have everybody come through them,
right?
And they have to deal with every situation that is coming along.
Mm-hmm.
And you have students that are going to be very creative, outstanding writers going through the public schools in
mm-hmm.
fourth grade or
right.
in ninth grade right now, and you have some students that can't even read a sentence,
mm-hmm.
but yet they're all there in the school.
Right.
And the school has to do something, and it does.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the schools, with the case of writing, are also dealing with the world of today where people just don't write as much as they used to, and we have short little notes and emails,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
as a result, writing has suffered.
Right.
In the last few years with the public schools in this state, there's been a stress and emphasis on writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's helped. And probably the biggest thing that could help the whole writing situation would be for people just to write more.
For all of us to write.
For everyone.
More. I mean, that's as in this article and in the research study that I mentioned, there is a psychological benefit in being able to express your deepest feelings.
I believe this, and that is the people that will criticize the public schools
mm-hmm.
and say, well, the kids aren't able to write anymore, and they're writing on a seventh grade level,
mm-hmm.
and they should be writing on a 12th grade level
right.
when they graduate. Many of those very people that are criticizing a student who can write on a sixth grade level, they're maybe able to write on a fifth grade level.
Right.
And they don't even know it.
Right.
So in other words, it's a complicated problem. Mm-hmm. And something like the public schools, they can easily be the scapegoat and take the hit for not doing their job.
Right, right. When actually the job that's being given to them and the tools that are being given to them are, one, the job is bigger than any one institution can possibly address, and the tools that are being given in the terms of financial support are minimal. I mean, on the one hand, in this country, we say we value our children, we value education, we want an educated populace, et cetera, et cetera. And then we turn around and say we don't have the money for it.
Right. We will not fund this or that the way it should be funded.
There's something in there that has a psychological term called cognitive dissonance. I mean, those two thoughts just don't belong in the same head.
I think you need to look at what you want.
Mm-hmm.
As your goal.
Right.
If you want students, all students, to be able to write as well as they can when they get out of high school or get out of college, that is not a free ride, and you're going to have to pay for it.
Right. Because if you don't pay for it that way, you're going to pay for it a different way.
It's just like the free lunch at school. There really is no such thing as a free lunch. You might have one student or another student receiving a free lunch, but someone's paying for it. Maybe the student and his family's not paying for the free lunch, but someone is, and that someone is the taxpayer.
Right, right.
And with writing, same deal. If you want the kids to learn to be better writers in grammar school, high school, you're going to have to hire more teachers.
I think, yes, hire more teachers.
To teach writing.
And pay them better so that you can make teaching the valued experience that it needs to be.
Many teachers go into public education and private education and become teachers and are good teachers, and then after 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, 15 years, they leave and they get out of it.
Right.
Because there's something else better for them out there, and they take that opportunity. A lot of people don't, but there's quite a few teachers that leave the profession.
I think that the public in general doesn't really have a good grasp of what teachers are required to do today.
Audrey, I don't think the public can ever have a good grasp of what is going on in the public schools and private schools in this country, simply because the only way you can really understand them is you have to be in them. You have to be there doing the job, being a part of it, and not for 6 months or a year or 2 years. You have to be there for an extended period of time. Just like you and I really don't know what's going on in the sheriff's department in this county.
Right.
We're not deputy sheriffs.
Right. But the thing is that there needs to be an education of the public in general.
That's right.
Because not everybody has the time to go and get involved to that degree. But just to let people know the amount of paperwork that teachers have to do, the amount of extraneous
things that have nothing to do with
teaching the students.
That's right.
That seem to take precedence in some ways.
If you become a public school teacher in this state, there is so many other things that are required for you to do besides teaching students.
Right.
Let alone teaching reading. There's just so much to do than teaching.
You would think that reading and writing and arithmetic, you know, the three supposed R's, they're not all R's, but should basically be stressed.
Well, another thing, talking about stressing reading, writing, arithmetic, for years and years, not just in this state, but in this country, teaching was stressed. You know, we tried to create better teachers, educate college students to become better teachers, reinforce better teaching methods. And that's all great, fine, good. But we needed to stress learning more than teaching, mm-hmm. because you could be the greatest teacher in the world, mm-hmm. and be up there teaching the best lesson you have ever taught, mm-hmm. but if the kids aren't learning anything from it, mm-hmm. for what? I mean, you see what I mean? The end game needs to be learning, not teaching.
So would you say that in order for that to take place, you have to go where the kids are?
Well,
in other words, if I want to communicate something to you, it's like language. I want to talk to you in terms that you will be willing to receive, that you will understand. So rather than using the terminology of, say, the workplace or the business place or something like that, what is it that the kids are interested in that you can tie the subject to?
Well, being a teacher, mm-hmm. and I've taught many different classes, mm-hmm. over, I can't tell you how many different years, mm-hmm. and so many different students. Mm-hmm. The only blanket answer to that, if there is a blanket answer,
right,
would be, in my case, I have always tried to stress the strengths of the students.
Right, exactly.
In other words, exactly. If I have 25 kids in front of me, mm-hmm. and I'm their teacher, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be giving them things to do that they can't do.
Right.
I'm going to see what their strengths are.
And build on
and
that.
And then work on what they can do to reinforce
the learning
more learning.
Process, right.
Exactly. So as a result,
so you have to
stress the strengths of the students. That's what I do. Right. You have to stress the strength of the students.
So you have to find out where they are before you can tell them what the next step is.
And
because if you're, I'm thinking in terms of a ladder, and if you
right.
are, you're on ladder on the step 12, and you want your students to come up to that level. But if they're only on step 2, you can't expect them to make that jump.
That's right.
You have to go to step 2 and find out where they
Plus,
are.
Plus, you have so many different levels in education. Mm-hmm. If you have a college professor who is teaching a course here at mm-hmm. Carolina, that professor is dealing with intelligent, high-end students mm-hmm. that have jumped all the hurdles right. and are accepted into this university, mm-hmm. and they're sitting in that class, and they can do mm-hmm. pretty much what is expected of them to do.
Right.
If you're a ninth grade high school teacher in a classroom here in one of the counties mm-hmm. in the east or the western part mm-hmm. of the state, or here in the central part of the state, you have a mixed bag of students out there, and
right.
every one of them is going to be on a different level.
Right.
And you have some that are very talented and creative mm-hmm. and smart, and you have some that just are not at that level.
Right.
And it's your job as a teacher to meet the needs of all the students in
mm-hmm.
your classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you will not teach one class
right.
in a public
right.
high school
exactly.
as a full-time teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You're
going to
have, depending on the system, you'll have 5 classes, or if you're on the block system, you'll have 4
mm-hmm.
classes for a semester.
Right.
There are so many variables.
Mm-hmm.
But as a result, you know, getting back to writing,
yes.
writing has suffered.
Yes.
Let's take you and I.
Mm-hmm.
When's the last time we sat down and wrote a 2-page letter to anyone?
I am one of the worst letter writers in the whole world.
Well, that's what everyone says nowadays.
Yeah.
None of us write letters the way we used to, because it's so much easier to do something else to communicate with someone. So as a result, writing suffers
uh-huh.
for everyone. And,
right.
of course, the kids are in the same boat. They're being sent to school, and they're not doing much writing at home or anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't write as well when they get out of high school or college.
And then will also affect their ability to express themselves. And this whole thing, the whole article on the power of the pen, this really stresses the writing and the being able to express your negative feelings, and considering the level of violence we have in schools today, it would be worthwhile, I think, to get people to be able to express themselves in some other way. And the value of being able to write this down is that it can be personal, it can be private, it can be shared, but you can feel totally safe in writing down exactly how you feel. And that's where I've always said, if you get the things out of your head and put them on paper, it nails them down so you can get a different perspective on them. And if
again, Audrey, you also have that individual out there that no matter how difficult any situation is or what kind of environment they are coming from, they will show up and be part of the schools, and they will just do great.
Yes.
And they'll be great students, and they'll go on and be creative writers, and they just have that ability to excel and become successful with whatever they go into. And there are a lot of kids out there like that that don't really need the school the way others do.
Right.
And if you're in it long enough, you see so much. You really do.
But that's the whole thing, again, of being able to express yourself in a safe manner and the psychological benefits of that in growing. And we do research. You know, the government does research. But if we don't train our young people to know that it is not only that it is safe, that it is practical, and that learning how to write clearly, coherently, even if it's only to yourself, is very valuable. And to have, you know, people coming out of high school or people even in college who just can't seem to write a coherent paragraph is, it's not the school's fault. I think it's our values in society altogether.
Everything has just become a different system, a different world.
Right.
You know, probably the most important thing the schools can teach the kids as far as academically, I think English, which writing and reading,
right,
are part of, because reading and writing are communicative skills.
Exactly.
And without communicative skills in this society, you're lost. You have to be able to communicate. If you can't read or write, you're at a tremendous disadvantage, and the only thing you can do is talk. And then you have to have mathematics. And math stresses digital skills, numbers. And we are living in a world of more numbers now than ever.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean we have to be able to do calculus and trigonometry and advanced geometry, but we need to be able to handle digital skills. And that's where the math and arithmetic come into the curriculum with schools. So English and math are the two most important subjects, I think, that the schools need to stress. And they do, and they try to do that.
Right, right. It's
but
the
it's
foundation.
A big job.
It is a very big job. But it's a very, it's serious. I mean, it's
plus
just,
you have so many other people involved that control the purse strings and the politics of the schools. And one district is different than another because of where it is. Its socioeconomic level is different than another one. There are so many variables, so many factors come into play that affect the learning that goes on in a school, in a location.
So then when we come back to the fact that it's you can't expect the schools to do it all, and that we as, not just as parents, I mean, but right now we're talking about kids, so certainly as parents bringing up children to help them learn how to write, to help them learn how to express themselves with the written word, and at the same time to do it more for ourselves as well. Because, I mean, this study that they're doing with the possible beneficial effects of expressive writing on people with diabetes because of its psychological benefits is certainly something to be considered very seriously. A lot of other researchers, this is just one that I happen to come across. So I want to thank you for coming and talking about the issue when it is involved with the schools, because
well, the schools affect all of us,
right?
All of us, and it's serious business, and it's not an easy job that the schools have.
No.
I remember this was about 25 years ago. I was an assistant principal at one of the high schools I was working at, and I think I suspended a kid and sent him home because he was doing something he wasn't supposed to do at school. And the parent came in, and he was upset, and he said to me, he said, I want to tell you, we are sending you the best kids we've got. And he's right.
Right.
And the parents and the public is sending the kids to the school and expecting, I guess, miracles. But they're sending us the best they have. And we have to do the best we can to help them learn. Again, it goes back to learning being more important than teaching.
Right.
And I don't think the schools have stressed learning as much as it it should have in the past 30 years or so in this country. But, you know, you can go to some counties and in some states, and it might be a different situation. Such a big country.
Right.
We're educating so many millions and millions of students out there. And everybody goes through the system.
And we hope it works the best it possibly can.
It's like a great ship. Sort of like the Queen Mary II, the new big ocean liner. It cannot make a quick turn out there in the ocean like a rowboat or a motor speedboat. It takes a mile for it to make a circular turn, maybe. And that's how the schools operate. They go in these waves and cycles. It cannot change overnight. It takes time.
So the schools are not going to change until we change.
Well, we're changing. All the time,
well,
the society.
I'm, you know, I'm thinking in terms of changing to the point where we start to pay more attention to the value of expressing ourselves in safe ways and thorough ways to stop actually and look and pay attention to what's going on in our minds and being able to write it down.
Well, I think we're getting more of that now in the schools. And remember, the schools are just a reflection upon of the society.
Exactly. It's my little brief experience as a student teacher made that very, very clear. I mean, I didn't spend the year or two, but I spent a couple of months and taught me a lot about the needs in the school system. And reading this article, started to think about the kids and what tools are we giving them in order to deal with the pressures of modern life. And one of the things that we're, and I'm not going to just say it's not just the school that's not giving it to them, but we as a society are not giving them the type of lessons maybe that we need to teach them, and one of them is writing and the value of this in being able to express oneself. Anyway.
Big job.
It's a big job, and it's one that goes on and on and on and on.
I think the Egyptians were trying to figure out what to teach their kids.
I'm sure.
So here we are today. 3, 4, 5,000 years later, and we're in the same boat.
And people coming along and giving the same pieces of information out. It's just that it's interesting today that it's gone from the theoretical to, you know, the just having a notion that this is a good thing for some esoteric reason. We're down now to the nitty-gritty of saying,
well, you know, another
this
thing
is measurable.
Also, Audrey, you have more experts out there now than you've ever had. Everybody's an expert about everything.
You trip over them around here particularly.
Oh. So there are more authorities and experts out there than ever before. And that affects things also.
Well, that's one of the things of just taking the time to pay attention. And I guess one of the word that we want to put out this morning is learning to write expressively can be very beneficial to you psychologically, emotionally, and physically, according to this research.
Goes back to the Greek philosopher and historian Thucydides, who said that knowledge is power, it has value for living.
Mm-hmm.
And writing has value for living.
Right. Absolutely. Well, thanks. And everybody out there, you've heard the word today about writing. Let's listen a little bit more to Sharon Isbin, and maybe then we'll come back with another word or two before we close up for the day. Okay, let's see where we are with Box Loot Suites. Am I doing the right thing? There we go. It was just slow coming up. Okay, that was Sharon Isbin with J.S. Bach Loot Suites. Rocco, you've got final words for us.
Well, first, I'd like to thank you for having me on, Audrey. And I look forward to you coming on the West End Report this evening.
Right.
Audrey's
going to
be my guest. But I want to leave you simply by saying, in this world that we're now in, there are no simple solutions to anything anymore, only intelligent choices to make.
And let's hope that we are intelligent in making them. Thanks, Rocco. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you out there an exercise to talk about expressive writing, or to experience the expressive writing for yourselves. And that is, start with writing a one-page autobiography. Well, I would go back there. First is, get a journal. Get something that you're going to write with. This doesn't have to be anything fancy. Something that you're comfortable. Figure out, are you going to write by hand? Do you want loose leaf paper? Do you want a bound notebook? Do you want to write with lines or no lines? Do you want to type onto the computer? Make the decision. And then do a page, the first exercise. And that is, start with flow writing. Flow writing is just one of the four ways, basic ways of writing that are, is biographical writing. There's, what, I'm losing my words. Dialogue writing, there's a lot of different kinds. Flow writing is where you just really just let the words come out, and you don't worry about sentencing, you don't worry about spelling, you just let it flow. Write a one-page autobiography. Start that way. This is a start to expressive writing. Plunge in with what is most compelling to you. What has led you to write? And then you can make a collage of the day you begin. Write headlines. Put in your horoscope. Put in weather notes for the day. That's your first start. And then think about, imagine walking down a path, participating in everything around you. You notice actions near and far. You interact with people and deal with obstacles and opportunities along the way. This is the walker, the active self. Imagine a mirror path running parallel to the path you're walking. The mirror path reflects feelings, thoughts, attitudes, and beliefs about what is happening. This is the watcher, the reflective self. And these two together create consciousness, the awareness of ourselves within our own existence. And being aware of that, then we come to the writing self. So you have a quiet place from which you can contemplate the paths of action and reflection, and then you become the writer. So try it out today and start a journal. I mean, this is a good week for it. It's going to be too hot to do anything else. So find a nice, quiet place with a pen, a pencil, the computer, book of what, paper of whatever type you want, and start to write. Okay? I'm going to be closing out with a little bit more of Sharon Isbin and Box Loot Suites. And stay cool, stay cool. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned now for readings with Joy Javits.